In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast, when to eat carbs for a morning workout, get rid of allergies fast, how to get bones to heal more quickly, and much more.
Health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
Well, Jay, the last time that we spoke, we were on home arrest, and based on my calculations, we still are.
I think that's pretty accurate calculation, yeah. What we thought was going to be a lot shorter turns out to be a lot longer.
You know, we should probably clarify for folks that just based on the way that we tend to schedule and run this show, we a lot of times have podcasts in the can, so to speak. Not meaning we're recording them while we're on the toilet, but meaning that a lot of times we're recording like a week earlier than the podcast comes out. And considering in this case with the whole coronavirus thing, like, you know, what was news today is like 10 years old tomorrow. So our apologies if when you listen to the Q&A episode and we're ranting about this current pandemic, if it feels like we're dumb and behind the times, it's because we usually are recording a week early.
Right.
Just so you guys know, a little inside baseball. Anyway, so anything change on your end? Jay, I know we just geeked out in podcast 409 on, you know, all of our workouts and everything we're doing while staying at home. So I don't want to rehash all that, but anything new on your end?
Nah, man, not much new. I mean, other than just like I have completely disconnected myself from any type of like media because I just like it's just not good for my soul. I have noticed that like when I sit down in the morning, like one of the things I used to do is I used to love like sipping a cup of coffee and just kind of either reading through the news or watching the news before I headed off to work. And now I've had to completely cease that. I just can't take it anymore. And I know that some people may think that you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a lightweight, but I just can't take it from my soul's perspective. So other than that, no, things have largely stayed the same. How about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same or in the same boat. I'm doing as much as I can responsibly to make sure that, especially from a health and a medical standpoint, just because I'm talking with so many people and, you know, I'm part of so many different physician networks where folks are bouncing things off of me, that I'm kind of trying to stay on top of what's progressing as far as medications, immune protocols, the state of the healthcare industry when it comes to this, but trying to avoid most media. I completely agree. And instead just spending lots of time with the family. I did do something new last night with all this extra time that I have on my hands.
What was that?
with all this. So remember that podcast? Maybe I'll link to it in the show notes. So everything that you guys hear in the show notes, if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/410, that's where you'll find today's show notes. Remember how I interviewed that guy who wanted to remain anonymous? He was like investor slash engineer who was talking about all these crazy biohacks nobody's ever heard of before. And, you know, all these technologies and fringe compounds and almost like
strategies. I remember that dude.
Yeah, particularly for anti-aging and longevity. It's kind of a controversial podcast because he's not like a qualified scientist, but he had a lot of little rabbit holes he was diving into.
Yeah.
One in particular that intrigued me was this idea of the clotho protein as something that has some pretty profound effects when it comes to turning back aging. And then he talked about this product called Immortalis, which he said was like this special probiotic strain that specifically reduces the rate at which telomeres shorten and has some pretty profound DNA repair mechanisms. So I was intrigued after that. And I went and I got my hands on a bottle of this stuff. So the problem
is it like crazy expensive?
Mm-hmm. It's like $2,000 for a bottle of this probiotic. And so I thought, well, geez, there's no way that's a sustainable monthly expense. But probiotics are bacteria. You can grow them, right? You can multiply them theoretically.
Oh, I see where this is going.
I do yogurt ferments and kefirs all the time. So I've been making yogurt out of this $2,000 probiotic called Immortalis with a yogurt maker. And it turns out that some of the microbes in heated milk can kill off some of the bacteria. So I have to boil and heat I've been using goat's milk. I boil and heat the goat's milk, let it cool to room temp, and then just ferment in a yogurt maker with two capsules of this stuff for about 12 to 24 hours. And the other thing that apparently helps it to remain more stable is if there's a lipid layer on top of the yogurt as it's fermenting. So I add olive oil to it. So I've been making that, and my wife calls it my $2,000 dessert because I've been having a little bit of that with some stevia after dinner. And I then began to research, again, because I have so much time on my hands, this idea of almost like a fecal transplant, a yogurt enema, which apparently a lot of folks in kind of like the functional gut health industry do make recommendations for colonic flora.
Right.
So I thought, well, what the hell? You know what?
I'll stick it up my butt.
Stuck at home. So I hung from my inversion swing for 20 minutes last night with a container of yogurt shot up my ass. Not just any yogurt, Immortalis yogurt. And then I went to bed and slept all night with yogurt up my ass. And then had a nice bowel movement this morning. I noticed absolutely nothing different at all. But that's the latest news from my house.
That's incredible. What were you expecting to notice, like some profound change? Well, I guess when it's $2,000, I mean, that should heal anything that you've got going on, plus cancer, plus coronavirus, plus whatever else.
You know, I went to the company's website and I explored, you know, some of their recommendations on how to use it. And they did mention on there that the gold standard way to introduce as much of the bacterial strain into your body as possible was via enema delivery mechanism or enema. Delivery mechanism. So there you have it. So, wow. What do you think? Should we jump into the news flashes and give people more useful information than $2,000 probiotic yogurt enemas?
I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying this conversation, but I guess for the sake of everybody else, let's do it.
All right. So first news flash, I think, is pretty cool. It's something I've been geeking out on lately, this idea of human photosynthesis. Mm-hmm. Did you check out that book I've been reading on human photosynthesis, by the way?
No, I haven't, because I tried looking it up one time, and you probably linked to it, so probably should just go to whatever we link to here. But I saw like a bunch of different authors, and so I just didn't know which one to buy. The one book was like $150, and I was like, I want to make sure I get the right one. So I'll just have to wait to see the one you linked to and then go get that one.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to give folks background because this is really, in my opinion, some pretty cool shit. A long time ago, I was reading on the website of a guy who I don't think the podcast will have come out by the time folks are listening to this, but a guy who has a really cool website called Green Med Info. Sire G is his name. I just interviewed him. He has a fantastic new book called Regenerate. And he published an article about this study that was in the Journal of Cell Science that reveals that when you have chlorophyll-rich components in your diet, like let's say cilantro is a perfect example, chlorella, you know, like chlorella tablets or chlorella powder from these superfood bags would be another example, that the pigments in that, the actual study was entitled that chlorophyll pigments enable mammalian mitochondria to capture photonic energy and produce ATP. And basically what that means is that when mammals consume a chlorophyll-rich diet, that they can capture specific wavelengths of sunlight radiation or photons from any form of light, like, you know, an infrared or red light panel will do the same thing. And that can actually increase ATP produced by the mitochondria. And so basically, as we know, prevailing wisdom is that only plants can use sunlight directly for producing energy through the process of photosynthesis. But it turns out that animals can, and mammals in this case, who have an appreciable amount of melanin or who don't have a lot of hair on their skin, can actually produce ATP if they have chlorophyll-rich compounds in their bloodstream. And I've mentioned this a couple times on podcasts before, but the idea behind this is that there are some specific components of the mitochondria that can accept electrons that are created when photons of light are captured by something like chlorophyll or by something like melanin on the skin. And then there was another really interesting article that questioning, it was a study about human hairlessness and whether human hairlessness allowed for greater amounts of natural photobiomodulation by allowing us to absorb ultraviolet radiation and then produce ATP.
Human hairlessness as in like because we have less hair than other animals, or if you're just naturally like myself and you don't have hardly any hair on your body?
No, I'm not saying bald people make more ATP. I'm just saying humans in general, because our melanin would be more exposed to sunlight radiation, would technically be capable of this so-called human photosynthesis.
Right.
Converting sunlight into chemical energy. Specifically, it's via the dissociation of the water molecule. Right. So, so melanin or chlorophyll can be used to dissociate the water molecule. And when you read this book, Human Photosynthesis, which I'll link to in the show notes, turns out that you kick off about 4 electrons when a photon of light hits, say, a molecule of melanin. And so when it comes to that article that I read, it inspired me to really focus on doing things like, you know, when I'm out in the sunlight, consuming a diet that's rich in greens or rich in chlorophyll, or adding a little bit of cilantro to the morning smoothie, you know, especially during the spring and summer months when you're out in the sun more. And then in this new book, Human Photosynthesis, it turns out that melanin is even more powerful than chlorophyll at having this same effect. And there's another study that looked at melanin and its ability to be able to actually almost like absorb radiation, you know, Chernobyl-like radiation, and convert that into, again, free electrons that can be produced or that can be used by the mitochondria to produce ATP. But it turns out that although that study was looking at the potentially radioprotective effect of melanin on the skin or the consumption of a diet rich in melanin, particularly mushrooms, a chaga mushroom in particular is extremely rich in melanin, that there is a radioprotective effect. But it turns out that when photons of light strike melanin, that it produces these electrons that can be accepted by the electron transport chain to produce ATP, again, in the absence of calories, to generate cellular energy. It's known as the photoelectric effect. So I'm totally not one of these breatharian guys who thinks that we can survive on, you know, on chewing on chaga and getting out in the sunlight, but I find it absolutely fascinating. And then it turns out that yet another compound known as methylene blue, which is actually used by a lot of biohackers these days as a kind of nootropic, what methylene blue can do is it can also absorb light to create free electrons within the cell. And so we've got these three things: chlorophyll, any melanin-rich food, particularly chaga, and then methylene blue is three different compounds that you can actually have as a part of your, let's say, your nootropic pantry or your healthy diet. When combined with exposure to sunlight or the use of, let's say, a red light panel, it can actually allow for the production of ATP. And I've been experimenting with this. I've been, for example, almost like overdosing on chaga. Like this morning, for example, I put 4 packets of that 4 sigmatic chaga into my morning cup of cacao. And then I went down and I did my usual red light therapy for 20 minutes. I've got this little dropper bottle. I get it from, I grabbed it and brought it into the office this morning for the podcast. I get it from a Blue Brain Boost, and it's just pure methylene blue, like pharmaceutical, the same place I get my pharmaceutical grade nicotine.
Yeah.
And because nicotine can increase what's called PGC1 alpha, which can increase mitochondrial activity as well, I combine the nicotine with a little bit of methylene blue when I'm doing red light therapy, do a little bit of the chaga, and then if you're already eating a diet that's rich in greens, or you could just like put some cilantro in the smoothie or you know, chew on some chlorella tablets, you can actually produce ATP in the absence of calories, which might even be notable for people who are doing, like, I don't know, you know, longer fasting periods or 5-day fast or something like that and want a little bit more energy for a workout. And again, like, I am not a guy who's going to say, oh, this will allow you to survive without food. but I just think it's some cool shit, like I was saying.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I was thinking during this whole time, well, I mean, I know you kind of pointed out three things with the melanin, the chlorophyll, and then with the methylene blue, but I was thinking, like, I wonder if this is to the disadvantage, at least one component of individuals who go full all-out carnivore. I mean, I guess they are missing out on one of these potential aspects, right?
Well, you still got melanin in your skin, I guess. And
yeah.
And some carnivore diet proponents do consider mushrooms to be acceptable as a part of the carnivore diet. So you could say that, you know, chaga or fungi could be part of that. And then, yeah, I don't think there's any amount of methylene blue in a ribeye,
but, maybe not yours.
Either way, you've still got some melanin to play with on the carnivore diet. So the book is called Human Photosynthesis, but then Sire G's new book, Regenerate. If folks grab that, it was one of the better books I've read in the past few months, and it gets into human photosynthesis too. So either of those books would be good if you want to take a deeper dive, and I will link to those in the show notes.
Sweet.
Okay, I know we were mentioning that we weren't going to talk a whole lot about coronavirus because, honestly, I'm just like sick of feeling like it's the only thing that I can talk about. However, I did come across an interesting article that Dr. William Seeds sent to me. He's a previous podcast guest. He's well known as almost like the world's leading expert in peptides, you know, like BPC 157 and TB 500 and all these crazy peptides. But he actually has a pretty good blog. And he shot me over an article that he was working on that was looking at the way that the COVID-19 virus uses its specific spike protein and the host receptor ACE2 in lung tissue to penetrate into a cell, and how lowering the pH to a more acidic state in the cellular environment allows the virus to actually activate and replicate, and only very small changes are required in a pH decrease, right, or an increase in acidity for this to occur. And so what he's been recommending to his patients, and what he wrote a great article about, is this concept of neutralizing pH to a certain extent. And again, it's only a very small pH change necessary for this. So we know that the kidneys do a pretty good job regulating pH anyways, or regulating acidity anyways. But the problem is if you're relying upon your kidneys to do all your acid alkaline regulation, they're still going to be drawing upon your minerals, right, which are stored in the adrenal glands, stored in bone tissue. So if you've got a net acidic state, it's just a little bit more stressful on the adrenal glands and potentially a little bit more harmful for bone density. So there is some wisdom to be said for eating a mildly alkalinic diet, or at least avoiding excess amounts of very acidic compounds like dairy, red meat, coffee, etc. I'm not against any of those compounds. They're all staples in my diet, but I don't overdo them because they are net acidic compounds versus alkalizing compounds, like, let's say, dark leafy greens and vegetables, etc. Now, one of course, the most alkalizing compounds that you can put into your body that a lot of research has been done on is just basic cheap ass baking soda, right? Sodium bicarbonate. And recent studies on sodium bicarbonate showed that it has a positive influence on the macrophages, which are specialized cells in your body that help to detect and assist in the destruction of bacteria and other harmful organisms. And so about the same time that Dr. Seeds sent this to me, this article that he wrote about, in that I'll link to in the show notes, I also just finished up a book called Forbidden Healing, which was actually written by a guy named Captain T.C. Randall. And the book, you know, it's admittedly, like, it's a little bit kooky. It's like this, you know, former army captain who has a farm, who's figuring out how to heal his animals using all these cheap ass tactics, you know, including, among other things, the use of baking soda and ascorbic acid as almost like health tonics. And so I had, after reading Forbidden Healing, I began adding into my morning glass of water about a 2-to-1 ratio of vitamin C, or just, you know, bulk ascorbic acid, and baking soda for the alkalizing effect. And also because the vitamin C is acidic, the baking soda kind of knocks off some of the acidic edge of the vitamin C. But there's also some interesting data on vitamin C. Like, we know that adequate amounts of vitamin C are effective in pneumonia prevention, so it has some lung protective effect. We know that doses above and beyond the RDI can be effective at treating upper respiratory tract infections. And then there was one very recent meta-analysis of 9 randomized controlled trials showing that vitamin C, not mega doses, but doses over and above the RDI, were effective at alleviating the severity and the duration of the common cold. And you know, that the end of that meta-analysis recommended adding vitamin C when sick or during times where you would be exposed to microbes to boost immunity. So I'm not one of those guys who's full on the bandwagon of vitamin C is going to cure all ills. You know, I'm not necessarily a Linus Pauling disciple, but I've been doing that baking soda vitamin C mix in my morning mason glass jar. You know, I drink a massive amount of water right when I wake up, and then usually again around like 5 or 6 p.m. so I'm not waking up at night to pee. And I've been adding baking soda to it, and I thought this was really interesting. And Dr. Seeds notes that bicarbonate can help the cell stay at almost like this metabolic advantage, especially during high demand aerobic situations where you slow down lactate buildup and you lower pH. It also appears to have some pretty good effects, like I mentioned, on what's called macrophage polarization. So, you know, I thought it was one of the more interesting cheap tactics, you know, with all these things from, you know, whatever, rectal insufflation of ozone to nebulizing glutathione to all these crazy things folks are doing, you know, including admittedly myself. You. For coronavirus, but baking soda and vitamin C in a morning glass of water, I think is just a prudent health strategy overall. And I thought it was an interesting article, so I'm going to link to that in the show notes. And also, again, that book Forbidden Healing wasn't written by a doctor, but I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. As a matter of fact, 3 books, because I know people are stuck at home a lot right now, 3 books, all 3 of which I'm going to be doing interviews with the authors of in the future, that I really enjoyed from a health standpoint recently, were that book Regenerate by Sire G that I mentioned earlier, and then this book Forbidden Healing by Captain James T. Randall, and then another one was by a guy named Joel Green called Peak Human. So I'll link to those books in the show notes if folks need some extra reading material. But I thought that simple ingredient to take action on COVID-19 was compelling, if nothing else.
Yeah. So, yeah. Super interesting. I even actually, while you were talking, I just went ahead and ate a whole box of Arm & Hammer baking soda. Pretty tasty.
All right, I'm going to set my clock here for about, by my estimation, I neglected to say that it gives you a glorious morning bowel movement, but you will paint the back of the toilet seat if you overdo it. I should mention dosage. I use about 8 to 10 grams of vitamin C, and it's a 2-to-1 ratio, so then I use 4 to 5 grams of baking soda.
Okay, so not, it's not very large.
I would not use much more than that. And then finally, and I promise everybody, this is the last thing we'll probably say about coronavirus, because I know many of you just don't want to hear about it. Oura Ring is doing something interesting. I don't know if you heard about this.
Yeah, I saw this.
It out there, because I know a lot of our listeners use the Oura Ring, and they probably saw this pop up in their app if they do use it. But they're collecting data now, specifically heart rate, respiratory rate, and change in body temperature data, to help to develop these algorithms that could predict or detect COVID-19. And I think it's a cool idea. I mean, a wearable that a ton of people have on anyways. You can opt to participate in the study if you open up your app and if you have an Oura Ring. And they're using this on healthcare workers. They're using it on just people who are curious but haven't been able to get tested. And we know that, of course, the data that you get, say your readiness score, your HRV, your body temperature, all of that has been proven in the past to be efficacious for determining things like onset of injury or onset of illness before the injury or illness occurs, so that you can then take adequate measures, like say rest and recover, or have a recovery day or something like that. But it turns out that they're now giving these rings to emergency medical workers who come in contact with patients who may have COVID-19 to track whether or not they're can be some efficacy of using a wearable to detect this. And also, they have added into the app for any of you who use an Oura Ring, the option to kind of opt in to a study that helps them see whether or not your data, mostly your body temperature data, can identify earlier than symptoms arise whether or not you have a coronavirus infection.
Yeah. I'll be super interested to see what the research data has to say about this, because from all the accounts that I've been hearing, credible accounts, I should say, is that they don't believe that this virus is just going to just be eradicated and disappear all at once. They think that it could potentially come back seasonally, like perennials. So I would be interested to see kind of what data they get from this so that we can use this in the future to either predict, the onset or kind of predict symptomology. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It looks like they're giving it to like 2,000 emergency workers that work in San Francisco Medical Center. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, cool. They're mostly doing it in the Bay Area. Yeah. So you have I think I might get in trouble if I don't say this. I'm commercially aligned with Oura, because I found Oura at this tiny little biohacking conference in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 6 or 7 years ago, and I bought one and brought it back to the States and started wearing all these conferences and stuff. And I realize now I'm sounding narcissistic, like I'm the guy who introduced it to America. But I got on the Oura bandwagon very early. And then when I noticed that they were kind of exploding, and what's the prince in England who was wearing the ring?
Harry?
Yeah, Prince Harry was wearing it, and all these celebrities picked it up, and it really became a thing. I did throw a little money in the hat and put a small investment into Oura Ring, so I should mention that just so I don't get in trouble. Or maybe that does get me into more trouble. Is that considered like a what do you call the pub schemes where you invest in something and you talk about it?
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
All right. If I get arrested, I'm sorry. I'm on home arrest anyway, so it doesn't matter. But right. Anyway, so yes, I did invest a little bit of money in Oura, but I like it. I use it. I bought one. So there you have it. What do you think? A few special announcements?
Let's do those.
All right. Well, kind of like last week's episode, there's not a whole lot to say in terms of where I'm traveling, because every event I'm traveling to has kind of sort of been canceled. Although I am taking part in a virtual, I'm going to have to say it again, coronavirus.
There it is.
Conference summit put on by Wild Health. So if you go to wildhealthmd.com, they're doing like a virtual summit with a bunch of doctors that I'll take part in as well. And we're going to live stream the whole thing. I forget the dates. It's coming up soon. But if you go to wildhealthmd.com, you'll be able to take part in that. Or
is it like about mitigation strategies?
View the replays. It's like mitigation strategies. It's detection strategies. It's mostly doctors who are on the front line of this thing.
Oh, sweet.
Just reporting on everything they've learned. I think it'll be pretty good.
Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
Hi, Ben. My name is AJ Newell. I'm a professional golfer. I've suffered from seasonal allergies my whole life, and in the last 5 or 6 years, they seem to have gotten worse. I'm talking scratching my eyes out and insanely miserable. I've had tests done, and I'm very allergic to almost every type of grass and trees, basically the highest level of allergic you can be, to where they want me to take an EpiPen on the golf course. As you can imagine, I've tried almost everything. Is there anything that you would recommend that may help me out? Thank you.
I feel so bad for people with allergies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't get them, knock on wood, haven't yet, even though you can develop them later on in life. Like if you get, you know, leaky gut, autoimmune issues, et cetera. And autoimmune issues are interesting. Like those things can pop up just from going through a time of extreme stress. You can develop autoimmune issues, leaky gut brought on by, let's say, a Z-Pack or some kind of antibiotic regimen that can cause you to begin to suffer with allergies you didn't have before. So it's not like just because you don't have allergies now, you might not develop them in the future. But I haven't had to deal with allergies myself much. However, my son River, he's come down with some stuff. Like when he used to play youth soccer, he would get pretty much exercise-induced asthma during games. And we got to the point where we were trying out a bunch of stuff. We just full-on eliminated dairy from his diet. Overnight.
Oh, wow. Overnight. Yeah, that's cool.
Just gone. And he was, breathing just fine. Breathing like Lance Armstrong.
Right. Interesting.
Now, during his soccer games. And then we went to Switzerland last year. And we were there at that European medicine clinic where I was teaching for a couple of weeks. And we were leading like a retreat for folks there. And he got super duper allergic to all of the different flora up there in the Swiss Alps. Like he was miserable. He'd wake up in the morning, his eyes were bright red and his cheeks were red and he was itching and rubbing his eyes. And they gave him a bunch of like their homeopaths and different medicinal compounds they had there. Nothing worked. Not, you know, none of their little tricks worked. And then they did, one of the docs came in and she was like, oh, I can get rid of that. And she put one tiny little, acupuncture needle on a specific acupuncture spot on his ear. And the way I'm not an acupuncturist, so I don't fully have my head wrapped around how this works. But then she put like a magnet right over the site where she had done the acupuncture after she did the acupuncture. And again, like overnight, he was fine. And,
wow.
And they never came back. The so whole
it's on
trip.
Like a some detox point.
I'm assuming it was a detox point. I think it's like an antihistamine point.
Oh, I guess that makes sense too. Yeah.
Something like that. And CNN actually did some coverage on this a few years ago where they showed that in folks, this was a report they did on a study that was published in the journals of the Annals of Internal Medicine, where for people who had pollen allergies and allergic nasal symptoms like a runny nose, they had the group divided into a group that did acupuncture treatments and then a group that did like a sham acupuncture, which I guess I don't know if that's like a rubber needle or like them pretending they're going to put the needle or needles placed at random non-meaningful points in the body or what. But
yeah, no,
they had a sham treatment and acupuncture treatment and showed a significant improvement in symptoms of allergies from the folks who had the acupuncture treatment for allergies. And so there's something going on there, although the number of studies on this are pretty slight. However, if, you know, especially during this time, if you're on home arrest and can't go to the acupuncturist, there's actually some pretty cool acupressure points that are specific to allergies that you can poke at yourself. Like they have like a spleen point. They have that ear point I was talking about. There's a point on your head. And each of these points, it's not quite as potent acupressure as acupuncture. Obviously, the puncture involves actually puncturing the skin with a needle and going with one of these tiny needles. But I'm going to link to an article that goes over 7 different acupressure points that could work for seasonal allergies that would be worth giving a try. Like, and for me, just watching what happened to my son with acupuncture and how quickly it set in, I think it's worth a try.
Yeah. So, what do you use to provide the acupressure? Like, is it like you have to buy a device or something that doesn't puncture the skin?
Yeah. It's a broadsword. So okay. Usually you'd have to go to like a, what do you call those conventions where a bunch of medieval enthusiasts come and dance around? Right. A Renaissance fair. You need to go to a Renaissance fair and get a broadsword. A spear would work, like one of those Spartan spears. Or maybe like a shark tooth. No, I think you just use your fingers.
Okay.
Literally. Like, because it's pressure. It's not puncture.
Right, so, right. Yeah, I know there's like those, you know, those mats that you can buy to lay on, those acupressure mats. I didn't know if there's like a little device like that you could buy, so or you could just go
wrap
free.
That around your face and
push it towards the ground.
Give your head a giant hug and you'll just hit all the acupressure points at once. There you go.
There you go, AJ.
The shotgun approach. There are some also some other things that may work for allergies. One kind of age old remedy, not that I think that just because something is old that it's useful, but a lot of people swear by just organic unfiltered apple cider vinegar. Drinking that a few times a day, probably because it has an effect on the bacteria. It might reduce mucus production. It might have a little bit of a lymph clearing effect, but a lot of people swear by that for seasonal allergies. Just drinking some apple cider vinegar,
yeah.
You know, like a teaspoon to a tablespoon a few times a day. So that's one thing. Another one would be the use of any type of saline into the sinuses. Now, a neti pot is, you know, an Ayurvedic medicine, the way that this is traditionally done, literally like cleansing the sinuses, or they call it irrigating the sinuses with a neti pot. You need to make sure you use a very sterile saline solution if you do that, because there is potential for infectivity if you're just, you know, sucking non-boiled or non-distilled or non-saline water into your respiratory tract. But a lot of people swear by a neti pot. I've used one before. I absolutely hate it. I don't like to suck liquids into my nostrils.
I'll
stick yogurt up my ass all day long, but I don't like to put salt water into my nostrils.
That's where you draw the line.
Yeah. Although you can get, if you have a sauna, Clear Light now has what's called a halotherapy unit, which actually microcrystallizes salt. So you breathe salt almost like those old school salt mines. into your lungs. And they've actually shown that folks who spend time in these old salt mines and use them as respiratory therapy actually have lower rates of upper respiratory tract infection and pneumonia and stuff like that. So breathing in microcrystallized salt could be an alternative to using a neti pot. And the problem is you need to be in a very small room where that you're using the salt infuser in to be able to get those effects. And then if you go to Amazon, there's also some companies like Amazon that sell these units that you just like put salt into the bottom of the unit and then breathe it in, almost like an inhaler. And I don't know if those work. I've never seen any research on them, but you know, if the neti pot works, you know, theoretically these same type of saline inhaling devices could work. And then one thing I have used in the past when I've been congested are, and you can get these very inexpensively on Amazon, those natural saline sprays, like intranasal sprays with xylitol. So,
what does the xylitol do? Is that just for flavor?
No, well, cleans the teeth in your nostrils.
Right.
To my understanding, the xylitol almost acts like a menthol like solution. It helps reduce tissue swelling. And actually, I think it's Patrick McCown. He talks about this in the book. Like the nasal passages are one of the only tissues in the body that, like the clitoris and the penis, actually have the same type of erectile tissue, which is one reason why breathing in through your nose produces nitric oxide, which expands that tissue, which is actually quite beneficial for congestion, like teaching yourself how to breathe through your nose. You're basically giving your nose a boner when you do that.
It's a great way to look at it.
So hooray for nose boners.
Nose boners.
One other thing, you know what I breathed into my nose the other day? So earlier I was actually talking about how you can nebulize glutathione and nebulize N-acetylcysteine and how I'm using that as kind of like a coronavirus strategy, just because the lungs are one of the few tissues that don't have their own built-in antioxidant system. And you can get like a cheap nebulizer on Amazon and nebulize glutathione or nebulize N-acetylcysteine. And I'm getting this stuff called Glutastat from Dr. John Lawrence down in Florida, and I've been doing that. But he also has a nasal spray that is called Hape. And I've used Hape before in plant medicine ceremonies. Like when you do combo, for example, a shaman will literally like blow this Amazonian style medicinal plant that has a ton of alkaloids and nicotine in it up your sinus passages, and it just blasts you into this deep meditative state. And John is now compounding it with oxytocin. So I actually used it prior to a breathwork session the other day. I did like five sprays up each nostril and just huffed and huffed and huffed. And stuff came out my nose that I never would have expected. So the idea
like
is
it's
supposed to stimulate the trigeminal nucleus, which is the part of the brain that, when activated, would balance the autonomic nervous system. You're very familiar with this.
Yeah.
And cause more vagal tone and really kind of like amplify any type of meditation that you do. But I just had all sorts of like strange dark green stuff coming up my nose because it must have penetrated deep into my sinus passages because it was burning deep, deep in there. But it's almost like he figured out how to take this stuff you'd normally only really be able to use in the Amazon. He turned it into a nasal spray. It's called Hape. I think he's calling it Zen, but Hape is the actual stuff you breathe in. And typically it's combined with like combo or psilocybin or MDMA or ketamine or ayahuasca, but you can get it as a nasal spray. I would not use this for seasonal allergies per se. It's just kind of it's like a fun little mental tweak to have around if you like to play around with microdosing stuff. So, I digress, and I'll link to that in the show notes. He's also compounding it with oxytocin now. So you could use it, for example, before sex. So interesting stuff, but we digress. So the saline spray, not necessarily that one, but like the nasal spray with the xylitol you can get off Amazon could work. And then a few other things, quercetin. You know, a lot of people, you know, like Dr. Matthew Cook, who's been on this podcast before, he uses quercetin a ton in his practice, typically as an injectable. However, as a bioflavonoid, it stabilizes mast cell production, and it's one of the more potent ways to reduce cytokine storms and to reduce inflammation, a topic that's relevant right now, but that's also relevant for allergies. So quercetin consumed orally in supplemental form can be okay. approaching a doctor and asking about getting like an injectable form of quercetin. It's a lot more potent if you inject it. You can also get really, really high dose quercetin, which is what they use in that recent anti-aging and longevity study. They combine quercetin with, dasatinib, I think it was. And and it's like a very potent anti-aging stack for reducing senescent cell formation. The problem with that is that it appears that if you're using high dose quercetin with this denasatib, and I might be pronouncing that wrong, early in life, when you actually want more senescent cells, it wouldn't necessarily be good. So I had my eyes on that study, but I don't plan on implementing anything that was in that research article on high dose quercetin until I'm older, when I know that I'm getting more senescent cells.
Yeah.
But it's interesting nonetheless. But either way, lower dose quercetin is really, really potent for shutting down the cytokine storm that might be brought on by allergies. Nettle tea is another one, and nettle leaves grow like weed on my property. The white-tailed deer feed on them because they're just so rich in amino acids, and they've got some fatty acids in them, and they're a very, very nutrient-dense plant, but those also are a natural antihistamine. So nettle would be another to look into. And then just a couple others to consider. One would be there's a few studies that show that probiotic supplementation may actually reduce incidence of allergies. So it could be worth not only consuming a varied diet that includes plenty of fermented foods or taking a high quality probiotic capsule. And that's
like your $2,000 one.
Try. Yeah, exactly. Shoot. The Immortalis ones. You can live a long time yeah. without allergies. And then I think last week's sponsor was Beekeepers Naturals, and they do like bee propolis, they do raw honey, they do all these different honey extracts that are very rich in natural compounds that may also reduce the incidence of allergies. But I think the best thing to do is to consume a teaspoon or so a day of a raw, unprocessed local honey from as close to where you live as possible, because if you get it from close to where you live, it is the pollens present in those honeys that you're almost like microdosing with that help to embark or if I can use my words properly, induce a mm-hmm. protective effect against allergies. So like a raw local honey is actually not a bad idea unless you are one of those people who thinks fructose is poison, and in which case you should probably go hide under a rock or quit drinking Coca-Cola. But fructose from raw, unprocessed local honey in small amounts every day is not a big deal. Or you could just eat the Keon energy bars, which have wonderful organic honey in them. But it's not local to you necessarily.
Shameless plug.
So, yeah, shameless plug. And then finally, I'd be remiss not to mention, did you see that new study it's a drug that lowers the chance of severe allergic reaction to peanuts in children who have peanut allergies.
No.
And so it's a pharmaceutical company has basically patented a drug that is based on peanut powder, which in my opinion is redonkulous because if you're allergic to peanuts, and this has been proven over and over again with my other son, Taryn, we did this and got rid of his peanut allergies. We microdosed him with peanut powder, like tiny, tiny little bits of peanuts for about 6 weeks, and his peanut allergies went away.
Wow.
But now this pharmaceutical company, it'd probably be too big of a rabbit hole for us to go down right now, but they actually developed a pharmaceutical based on peanut agglutinins, and they're now selling essentially like overpriced peanut powder.
It
does work for peanut allergies, but I say just like, you know, powder up some peanuts and do that instead. I think it's called Palvorzia is the name of it, but it just came out like a month ago.
Jeez. So pharmaceutical fish oil to pharmaceutical now peanut powder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pharmaceutical fish oil is another one. I just thought,
it's crazy.
There's not a big difference between it and regular fish oil, but
right.
Yeah, you're right. There's that. I think meta-analysis that came out on the cardiovascular protective effects of fish oil, and some pharmaceutical company came out with their own formulation of EPA and DHA, which great for them because they can get covered by insurance and sell it for boatloads of money.
Loads.
Anyways, though, those are some of the things I would do for allergies. So hopefully that's helpful. We'll put helpful links up for you if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/410.
Hi, Ben. Lucas here, a Californian in South Africa. You often recommend two nutrition tactics, one being saving your carbs for night, and the second being intermittent fasting with a long fasting window in the morning. I wonder how your recommendations on those two things would change for someone who's doing high intensity Metcons first thing in the morning around 5:30 a.m., especially if that person is looking not to optimize for fat loss, but for performance and overall fitness. Thanks.
You know, I've been using this strategy for a long time, and I outline it in detail in Boundless, and I've talked about it on podcasts before, how I stay in a state of mild ketosis, like 1 to 3 millimolars of ketones, if I measure all day long by not eating any carbs all day long. Then I work out in the late afternoon to early evening, thus inducing a state of temporary insulin sensitivity, have carbs with dinner, you know, like 100 up to 200 grams of carbs with dinner, which also helps you to sleep better. And then I just don't eat carbs at all again until the next evening's refeed. And right. Another cool thing about that is because I'm in that insulin sensitive state post-workout with that evening refeed, I'm also socking away storage glycogen in the muscles and the liver because you upregulate your GLUT4 transporters. And so I've got enough fuel on board for the next day's workout, even if I'm not eating carbohydrates right before the next day's workout. And so that was originally made popular. And actually I found it via a program called Carb Night, which was designed by a guy named John Kiefer, who kind of looked into some of the research behind this. And, you know, this idea that you're more insulin sensitive in the morning, and the morning seems like the more logical time to eat carbohydrates, makes sense. But considering you can exercise in the late afternoon or early evening and induce almost like a temporary state of insulin sensitivity, I like that approach better, because then I can have my cake and eat it too. I can be burning fats all day long and then refuel with carbs in the evening. And then even if I've got slightly lower muscle glycogen stores by using that approach or by eating a somewhat low carb diet, it's been shown, and there were two different studies that came out that showed that training low and competing high, or training low and then for your very hardest workouts having carbs, enhances fat metabolism and increases endurance performance. And I originally began to use this strategy when I was competing in endurance sports like Ironman, once I came across this data that, oh, I could eat a low carb diet and then occasionally when I have a really hard race or workout, throw some carbohydrates in. And, you know, the way I describe it is you use sugar as a sometimes drug, right?
Yeah.
So when you really, just like you use, I think we talked about this last week, you use music, you know, sometimes when you really got to push hard and need to overcome neuromuscular fatigue, and the rest of the time you listen to audiobooks or podcasts or silence during your workout.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know, Enya. So anyways, if you're doing a high intensity Metcon first thing in the morning and you're using this approach, trust me, the carbohydrates that you eat in the evening are going to be more than enough for you having liver and muscle glycogen stores topped off for that morning Metcon workout. So
okay.
There's nothing.
So you wouldn't change that strategy?
I would not change that strategy at all.
Oh,
if you wanted an extra kind of like boost, you could, shameless plug, use like essential amino acids, preferably from Keon, or creatine pre-workout rather than carbs, maintain your ability to stay in that, you know, autophagy inducing fasted state, maintain the ability to burn more fatty acids as fuel during the day. And then again, have your carbohydrates in the evening. But so yeah, you could do something like amino acids and creatine before a fasted, carbohydrate depleted or low carb workout and get really good results, because those are going to stave off neuromuscular fatigue as well. Now, if the only exception to this rule, the only thing I would change would be that if you are a professional athlete or you are a two-a-day exerciser, research shows that you cannot adequately replenish glycogen stores for the second workout of the day if that second workout of the day is occurring within 8 hours after your first workout. Meaning that if you're exercising twice a day, let's say a workout in the morning and a scrimmage or a practice or some type of competition in the afternoon or the evening, and that afternoon or evening session is 8+ hours after your morning session, it would benefit you to consume carbohydrates in that 20-minute to 1-hour-ish window post-workout to replenish your glycogen stores so that you can perform as well as you need to in that second session of the day. But we're talking about a pretty small subset of the population that would need to use that strategy. You know, a high school or collegiate athlete or professional athlete, or I guess just somebody who really, really likes hanging out at the gym and is, you know, doing a couple of CrossFit sessions a day or something like that. I personally have said before that I exercise in the morning, but for me, and then I exercise again often less than 8 hours afterwards. But for me, my morning exercise is like not really exercise, right? It's like sauna with yoga or a walk in the sunshine. So for me, you know, I don't have carbohydrates after that with breakfast just because that's not a very depleting workout. I'm talking about if you're crushing it twice a day, then have carbohydrates twice a day after the first session and then later on in the evening at some point after the second session. And that's the way that I would structure things. And furthermore, one final little modification you can make is if you're having carbohydrates after that second training session of the day, let's say you do fall into that category who's doing two carbohydrate feeds per day, you can still wait a couple of hours after your evening workout again, because there's no way you're going to work out like 6 p.m. and then work out again at 2 a.m., right? So you've got more than 8 hours before your morning workout. So I would actually wait 1 to 2 hours to eat your post-workout meal, because then you're going to maximize that amplification of growth hormone and testosterone that we know occurs when you don't eat right after the workout and you just wait for a little while. There's a little bit of an upregulation from a neuroendocrine response that's kind of favorable for hormones. So that's the way I would structure things.
All right. So Ben, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but when I look at Lucas's question, he's talking about your two recommended nutrition tactics, saving the carbs for the evening and then an intermittent fasting window, a longer, faster fasting window in the morning. So if he's engaging in kind of what you're recommending and what you're still recommending, but he's still doing intermittent fasting and doing a high intensity Metcon training at 5 a.m. in that fasted state, that's not something you typically recommend, though, do you? Doing a Metcon training session fasted.
The best time of the day to work out is when you're able to work out.
Right. Well, I guess that's true. Yeah.
The best time of day to do a Metcon is when body temp peaks, grip strength peaks, reaction time peaks, post-workout protein synthesis peaks. The second rise in testosterone occurs, and that would be between about 4 and 6 p.m. So,
yeah,
you know, if you want to get the most out of your Metcon, shift it to then. And when you wake up, just like go for a walk in the sunshine or do something passive and restorative, because your body naturally surges in cortisol anyways in the morning. You don't have to do a hard workout, but that's your only time you can do a hard workout. You know, do it then. I have some clients who flip flop because that's their scenario. They do the hard workout in the morning and then just like go for a walk in the afternoon, you know, after work. So,
yeah.
But even in that scenario, I have those folks wait until dinner to have their carbohydrates. Because again, there's no need to eat carbohydrates right after the workout if you're using the muscle and the liver glycogen that you put on board in the dinner the night before is feeding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. We got one more question.
Hey, Ben. Nate here. I recently had a motorbike accident in Thailand where I broke my collarbone. And I had surgery to insert a stainless steel plate and screws upon opinions of several doctors here to help support the alignment of the healing process. And I was curious if there are biohacking strategies or techniques I could use that would help both expedite the healing process, but also to make it more complete with the bone mineralization and density. Thank you.
I had a motorbike accident once, Jay, but I did not break my collarbone.
Yeah.
I bruised my balls. I'm not kidding. When I was 13,
That's all you had happen was you bruised your balls. No lacerations on your hands or your wrists or anything like that. Just
hey,
balls.
Don't judge. I was big into dirt biking when I was a kid because we lived out in the countryside.
Yeah.
And I had this little 250cc dirt bike and I would just blast up and down these hills. And I was ripping my dirt bike around a corner. The front wheel hit a rock and the bike just stopped. Literally just stopped solid right there.
Oh, yeah.
I went flying over the handlebars. And the one thing that slowed me down was my crotch hit the left handlebar.
Your saggy balls.
And I swear to God, I was actually pissed because I had missed the whole basketball season that year. My left testicle particularly was swollen nearly the size of a softball.
Oh, goodness.
For like a week. I had to go to the urologist. They had to do a bunch of tests. My parents were scared because they thought, you know, that their son Ben was not going to produce any grandchildren. And I was afraid that things were going to work in that department any longer. And I recovered. It's fine. My balls are just fine, everybody.
That's good.
However, my collarbone did not take a hit. My testicles took it for the collarbone. So,
but you did so all these tactics you're about to talk about on your balls.
I can tell you how to repair your testicles quickly, but I don't know about the collarbone. No, there are some things. There are some things that may help with bone mineralization and density that go above and beyond just like, I don't know, throwing eggshells into your smoothie, which some people do actually for the calcium. Actually, a lot of folks on the carnivore diet do that because you don't get all the calcium from meat, but they'll use like eggshells or bone meal powder for their calcium. Which honestly, it's not a bad strategy to use eggshells or bone meal powder. Both of which are going to do something similar for you as just taking a calcium supplement. But nonetheless, that's a decent strategy, but that's kind of like something a lot of people already know. So when you look at actual technologies, there was a pretty good study that came out called Biological Adjuvants for Fracture Healing. And in that paper, they went over a whole bunch of different strategies, several of which were interesting, but I think a little inaccessible to the general population, particularly bone marrow aspirate, stem cells, and the use. And this might be a little bit easier for people if they can hunt down a doctor who can prescribe this stuff, but parathyroid peptide. Parathyroid is a peptide based on the parathyroid hormone, and that can actually help to pull calcium out for bone healing. So those would be some things that you could talk to a doctor about, would be stem cells, bone marrow aspirate, and parathyroid peptide administration. But then things you could do at home would be infrared light therapy. That actually can have an effect on healing bones. So that would be one that you could look into. I mean, you could do a lot of sunlight, but there are studies that show that infrared light can improve fracture healing. And a lot of professional sports teams use infrared lasers to improve athlete healing times. But as I discussed in detail in the podcast that I did with the folks at Juve, these full body light panels do the same thing as the infrared lasers. And so you could just do, you know, full body infrared light, sunlight, or use like laser therapy to improve fracture healing.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably having the laser mounted on the back of a shark, I think would probably be the best way.
Austin Powers there? Is that
yeah.
a little?
Yeah.
Ah.
What's he say? A million? A billion? Is it a million?
$1 million.
$1 million. The other thing from like a biohacking standpoint would be pulsed electromagnetic field therapy or pulsed low dose ultrasound. That has very strong evidence for the healing, particularly of fresh fractures, and less evidence, but still evidence for the healing of delayed union or slower to heal fractures. So for any of my clients who have had bone issues in the past, either low bone density or broken bone, I've always recommended PEMF. You can get the small portable units like Dr. William Pollock has one called a Flex Pulse. That's pretty good. But I mean, if you want the gold standard for PEMF, get access to one of these Pulse Centers tables. Like that's the one I have in my basement. And it's just like the Swiss Army knife for inflammation, for bone healing, for freaking headaches, for thyroid. You can use it almost like that Gainswave acoustic sound therapy on your testes. I mean, that thing is the Swiss Army. It's expensive, but
yeah, it looks sweet though. There are like a lot, I know a lot of chiropractors, like in my area at least, utilize these. So you could probably go to one. I mean, if you can't afford whatever they are, $20,000 to $30,000 machine, just go to one. You know, at a chiropractic clinic, but I use the Flex Pulse on my knee that I'm rehabbing, and I probably should go to a Pulse Center's place and get one of those done.
I'll link to the Pulse Center's website in the show notes. You could find a practitioner or a clinic that has one. You could just go use that 20 to 30 minutes a day on the collarbone. Just double stack a couple of the PEMF pads over the collarbone. And that's what I would do if I were in your shoes. And then, as far as nutrients go, multiple studies on colostrum. Colostrum for providing some of the what they call I guess it's basically like osteoblast precursors, and that would be one thing, would be just daily use of colostrum, which is a great immune system tonic anyways. There, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin K all have good research behind them. And Thorn, a supplement company who I really like, they have a supplement called Basic Bone Nutrients. That's basically calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin K. And so that would be one to consider. we know that adequate mineral intake is a good idea for maintaining bone density and building bone. So just using a lot of sea salts or trace liquid minerals, I think that that would be prudent. Zinc. Thorne also makes one called zinc picolinate, and zinc picolinate is a very good absorbable form of zinc, but something that's about 10 times higher than that is surprisingly black ant extract, which you can buy in powdered form from that company Lost Empire Herbs. Great pre-workout too. It gives you a ton of energy. You can literally carry your house on your back when you use that stuff.
Just like but an ant.
Extremely high in zinc, which is also good for testosterone, good for the immune system. They're probably going to be sold out. Everybody who sells zinc is sold out these days because of the coronavirus thing. I think after that CNN story where they reported that, I think vitamin A, vitamin D, and zinc were the three that they highly recommended in that story. Harder to find those compounds now, but I think black ant extract is still available. So copper would be another, especially if you're using zinc. You want really good copper-zinc ratios, and studies have shown a protective effect and a healing effect on fractures, particularly with the intake of copper. So, for example, you could stack the Thorne copper bisglycinate, which is also a very absorbable form of copper, with either black ant extract or the Thorne zinc picolinate. So you could do that and still take their basic bone nutrient supplements. So then you've got calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K, copper, and zinc. And that would be like a really good stack for healing up the bones more quickly. A few other things to consider would be, like I mentioned, eggshell consumption and bone meal consumption is a good idea. But you can also eat foods where you can just chew on the bones. You know, like when you're having roasted chicken and you chew the knuckles off and suck the marrow out, that's a good strategy, as is bone broth, right? Just ordering a bunch of, like, you know, kettle and fire bone broth, or making bone broth and drinking bone broth on a daily basis. And then one thing that has a ton of bones in it, one of my favorite foods that my pantry is chock full of right now, are sardines, right? Some sardines are skinless, boneless, but if you get the sardines that have the bones in them, you can just eat the whole sardine. The bones are jello soft.
Oh yeah.
And they're chock full of calcium and a lot of other bone healing nutrients. You get some minerals in there, and they're good for you either way. Not for your breath, but as long as you're willing to invest in a good toothpaste, you could eat a lot of sardines and bone broth and eggshells and bone meal. And that kind of comes down to one of those nature's signature type of things, right? So if you consume something that in nature kind of reflects the organ or the area you want to heal, it probably is going to have a decent effect, as all the scientists hang up on the podcast and laugh at me and walk away. I'm just saying. Bulk ascorbic acid or vitamin C. We already know everybody's going to be mixing that with their baking soda anyways after listening to this podcast.
Two for one.
That also may have an effect on bone. One study found that in tibial fractures, vitamin C could actually significantly decrease the healing time. Kind of like zinc, the problem with vitamin C right now during the coronavirus quarantine is it's nearly impossible to find anywhere. You could even eat vitamin C rich foods, you know, like kiwis are a perfect example. A couple of kiwis before bed can help you sleep anyways, because they can help with your melatonin release. But those are really rich in vitamin C. Those tart cherries would be another one. We also at Keon have the Keon Flex. And although that's most of the evidence behind what we have in Keon Flex is for like soft tissue issues or joint health, not for broken bones per se. If there is, you know, joint tenderness or swelling or inflammation related to the collarbone issue, I gotta say that I would consider throwing Keon Flex into the mix. So yet another shameless plug, but
yeah,
I'm just saying that would be my stack. Like if it was me, I would definitely do vitamin D, vitamin K, calcium, magnesium, or the eggshell bone broth, bone meal type of approach. Get some extra zinc and copper in, drink a lot of bone broth. Vitamin C, if you can get your hands on it, some bone-in sardines, some colostrum, and then pulse electromagnetic field therapy, red light, and if you can get a doctor to give you parathyroid peptide, that might help, as would a stem cell injection. But I know the stem cells, you know, could be a little bit more of an expense for you. But that is that's my full-on recommendation. And again, we'll put everything over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/410. And in addition to that, I think this is time that we give away some goodies to our top reviewer, is it not?
Oh, it is most definitely the time where we give away some goodies.
Let's do it.
All right. So this one is coming from a guy named, or a gal. Why do I have to say guy? It could be a gal. But I love this name, and I really hope that this is the actual name of the individual. But this is Billy Wildberger. That's a strong name, man.
It's a badass name.
I love it.
Sounds like a Wild Wild West name.
It does. So here's what Billy Wildberger has to say. And he called this podcast exceptional in every way. Mm. It says, as a 43-year-old looking for the latest in research, biohacking, fitness, and longevity info, Ben Greenfield is solid gold. So glad I found this tremendous resource. Thanks for everything, Ben and Jay. Even though he didn't say and Jay, but I'd like to think he meant that too.
He was thinking it.
He was.
Well, that's an awesome review. What's his name again?
Billy Wildberger.
Billy Wildberger?
Yeah, I like it.
I feel like I got to talk like that when I say it. Billy Wildberger. If you email gear@bengreenfieldfitness.com, we will send you not only a 10-gallon hat and some six shooters, but also a Ben Greenfield Fitness beanie, cool tech t-shirt, and a BPA-free water bottle with the Ben Greenfield Fitness logo on it. So you can sport that the next time you're working out. And for any of the rest of you, if you want to support the show, leaving a review in iTunes or elsewhere is one of the best ways to support the show. So anyways, that helps with the good karma. And if you guys have questions, comments, feedback, your own tips and tricks to add, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/410. Leave them there. And Jay, I was able to get through this entire podcast without any yogurt dripping onto my inner butt cheeks. So I'm proud.
That's impressive. That shows skill, man.
Because I would have really expensive butt cheeks if that would have happened.
That's true.
All right. Well, stay safe and healthy out there, man. Don't go too nuts during your cabin fever episode.
Same here, man. You too, bud.
All right. Catch you on the flip side.
See ya.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.